Hello, welcome to the IASB Update Podcast. The IASB met in public on the 19th and 20th February 2014 at its offices in London. This podcast just provides a short summary of the events of that meeting. I'm joined here today by Alan Tashir, Senior Technical Director at the IASB, and Stephen Cooper, a member of the IASB, who will be taking us through the finer points of proceedings. Over to you, Alan. I believe we're going to start with agriculture and bearer plants.
Yep, thanks, Chris. As many of you will know, we've had an exposure draft out to look at a narrow scope amendment to our standard IS 41, which deals with agriculture and agricultural produce. And the proposal is to modify the way we deal with what we call bearer plants. So a very simple example would be somebody with an orchard with apple trees. Mm-hmm. The tree itself is the plant that bears the fruit. And we had proposed moving to a model where instead of measuring the plant itself at fair value, that we'd treat it like properly planted equipment. And so you'd essentially, once it reaches a point at which it becomes productive, then it's locked in as essentially its initial cost, for want of a better term, and then it's expensed or depreciated over its useful life. The comment period closed earlier this year. We've done the analysis, and this is the first time we've had it back at the board. I think there was strong for support for us to go ahead with the project. The main issue for us is two issues we looked at were, one, the scope, and that some of the respondents suggested that rather than just dealing with bearer plants, that we should extend that principle to bearer animals in terms of particularly the dairy industry, so that, that milking cows, for example, should be treated like properly planted equipment as well. On that particular matter, the board decided to stay with the current scope, because once you start to creep out into these slightly other issues, you get difficulties with, and we can call it in complexities, different types of animals and so on. It is difficult to actually limit or draw a line as to the appropriate cutoff for which animals are bearer animals and which ones are actually there for the meat and so on that they ultimately might produce.
Sure.
So we're retaining the scope. It will be for bearer plants. Second one was for the plants themselves. People asked, or some people asked, if we could actually modify the requirements so that the fruit itself was not measured at fair value. And we decided that wouldn't be appropriate, or the board did, because it was being consistent with the way we deal with lots of other crops, for example. So in both the matters, I think the idea was to try and limit the scope of this particular amendment, keeping it narrow, helping a known and defined group of entities with a known problem, then we can actually move to a fairly quick resolution. If we are to look at the broader issues, such as the broadening the scope to other types of agricultural produce, for example, or plants, that would be a bigger issue. And at the moment, we don't have a current project or even research project to look at that, but we did note that we have the agenda consultation starting in 2015, and I think there's enough input to suggest that this is something we might identify for consideration as part of that consultation process.
Okay. Thank you very much. Great. Moving on, fair value measurement of the unit of account, Stephen.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. This is an amendment the board has been working on to IFRS 13 dealing with fair value measurement. And it came about because of diversity in the interpretation that some people were making of IFRS 13 when it came to the valuation of certain equity investments. In particular, the fair value measurement of quoted investments in subsidiaries, joint ventures, and associates, and also the measurement of the recoverable amount of cash-generating units when we're measuring those on the basis of fair value less cost to disposal as part of impairment testing. And this diversity in practice came to our attention, and it was a difference in the interpretation of how to apply a so-called portfolio exception that's in that standard, and the board felt that it was appropriate that we should eliminate that diversity by making certain clarifications. Mm-hmm. The board already debated what those clarifications should be, and the meeting this time was to think about the transition proposals in respect of that amendment. So the transition proposal in respect of the quoted investments in the subsidiaries associates I mentioned, is to adjust retained earnings for the beginning of the period in which it was first applied, and then obviously follow the revised accounting method for that period, but not to adjust the prior year. Sometimes we use terminology to try and describe this approach, like modified prospective or modified retrospective, but I think some of those terms are interpreted differently by different people. So I think we felt that it was important to spell out exactly what we mean in terms of the transition rather than apply a particular label to it. Slightly different in the case of the quoted cash generating units, we did say there that we would apply the amendments purely prospectively, so not the adjustment to opening retained earnings. So this really was pretty much the end of our deliberations on this. The board also agreed that with the staff that we had gone through the necessary due process steps in this area, and that we gave permission for the staff to draft the amendments to the standard and begin the balloting process on this. So this was the last meeting that we will have on this particular project.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks very much. Financial instruments is the next topic. Stephen, impairment, obviously three phases in this project, but two discussed at this meeting. Impairments, of course.
Yeah, well, this is another project that has come to an end. I'm sure listeners to this podcast will have heard myself and others comment on the financial instruments impairment project many, many times. And this, in fact, is the board's last meeting on this. We have finished our deliberations on the revised impairment model, a model based upon the deterioration in the credit quality of financial assets, a move away from the model in IAS 39. And the board received a presentation from the staff summarising what that model is. We also had a summary of where the FASB is at the moment. I'm sure you're all aware that the boards are no longer aligned in their thinking on impairment. We also had a discussion about the due process, the need to re-expose. The board concluded that we had gone through extensive due process, above and beyond, I think somebody said, and decided that there wasn't the need to re-expose under our due process, and therefore gave permission to the staff to draft the standard, the additional chapter that will be inserted into IFRS 9. All the board members agreed on this, and all 16 agreed with the decision, and nobody indicated an intention to dissent on this standard. So that's the end of the process,
And perhaps
the drafting of the final requirements.
Yes, thanks, Steve. Perhaps I can pick up the other part of that was, of course, the refinements, if I can call them that, the classification measurement sections of IFRS 9. And again, this was not about any technical decisions. This was a chance for the board to sit back and reflect on all the steps they'd taken in developing the amendments to IFRS 9, checking, make sure that they're comfortable, they're consulted broadly enough and considered enough information to be able to finalise. And again, there was a 16-0 vote in favour of finalising refinements that reflected concerns that we'd heard in practice about the application of IFRS 9 from those using it for classification purposes, plus also introducing a new classification category. So again, it was a 16-0 vote. In this case, one member is considering dissenting, but we'll see how that goes.
Sure.
Oh, an effective date, Steve.
Yes, the effective date, which was the key decision in terms of IFRS 9. The board had previously indicated that the effective date for IFRS 9 wouldn't be earlier than 1st of January 2017. We did that some months ago, but then said that we would come back and have a final deliberation on exactly what the effective date should be. This has been a difficult decision because, firstly, we're making some significant changes, particularly in the area of impairment, and many constituents have told us that they need a significant amount of time to prepare for that and develop systems. Also, there's the interaction with the insurance project, and many insurers in particular have said that we really need to align the effective dates for the new insurance standard and also financial instruments, or if we don't align those effective dates, we should consider special provisions in terms of transition. Also, there's of course a feeling that the effective date should of financial instrument should be as early as possible, because of particularly the changes to impairment accounting, many feel that the improvements in that area compared with IAS 39 are urgent, and we should introduce them as soon as possible. Therefore, they didn't want to delay the effective date excessively. Whereas from an insurance perspective, because we're still deliberating insurance, having a later effective date will, of course, help in that case. Anyway, the board decided that we shouldn't link IFRS 9 and the effective date necessarily to the forthcoming insurance contract standard, and that we should make a decision on the IFRS 9 effective date, and that if the insurance contract standard doesn't become mandatory until later, that will be something that we will live with, but we will also consider what transition provisions to apply in respect of that insurance contract standard to try and mitigate some of the complications that might arise. We decided to go for an effective date of 1st of January 2018. Now, based upon the publication of the completed IFRS 9 during this year, that will leave more than 3 years for implementation. So that positively reacts to some of the calls that we've had for a decent amount of time for people to prepare systems. Another reason for selecting 2018 is that it does increase the likelihood that we will be able to give insurers at least the opportunity of implementing the two standards at the same time. Whilst the mandatory effective date of insurance may not be 2018, it could be later than that, for example, we would almost certainly allow early adoption of an insurance standard, so there would at least be the opportunity for the adoption of those two standards in the same period, or at least we would increase the likelihood that we will give people that opportunity. But as I said, the completion and the effective date of the insurance contract standard is still uncertain, because we're only just starting the re-deliberations on that particular subject. But what we are not doing is tying the effective date of IFRS 9 to completion of the insurance contract standard. So it's been set for 2018, and that's when it will be implemented. So that was the key decision in terms of IFRS 9. With that, the staff obviously have to finish off the drafting of the two new chapters. They will be inserted, and then the revised IFRS 9 published as soon as we can complete the necessary steps to do so.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. I think that just about wraps it up. It's been quite a busy week here at the IFRS Foundation. Two important public meetings this week. Once the Advisory Council met on Monday and Tuesday this week. Recordings of that, as always, are made public and are available on our website. Also, yesterday and today, the Capital Markets Advisory Committee met here in London as well. Again, recordings, by the time this podcast is released, should be up on our website. A comprehensive written ISB update summarizing the events of the board meeting in February is also available to download. Just go to ifrs.org and go to the Stay Keep Informed tab at the top navigation, and you should find us there. Thanks for your time, and we'll be with you again next month. Thanks.